I'm Travis.
I'm Nate.
And I'm Emily, and you're listening to the Cast and Blast Florida podcast. We are serious outdoorsmen who don't take themselves too seriously. This week on episode 60, have you ever wondered about the details of taxidermy? In celebration of duck season, we have an interview with expert taxidermist Landon Blankenship. Plus, we talk new logos, Florida politics, and how to become a friend of the show.
What's new, Nate?
I woke up last week in Arkansas at like 6 a.m. to catch a flight home because I was working out there. And it was like 30 degrees, clear, a little breezy. And I thought to myself, it is a absolute shame I'm not sitting in a duck blind right now.
Why were you not sitting in a duck blind in Arkansas?
Yeah, well, I don't know, man. I'm not living life right. That's the problem.
Yeah, I'm worried about where your priorities are, that you were in Arkansas for the opening of duck season and did not shoot a duck in the face.
Yeah. It was opening day, Saturday.
By the way, this is not what's new, but did your cousin-in-law shoot a monster buck through a fence?
Yeah, so my cousin who lives in Kentucky with his wife.
Hold on. This is friend of the show.
Friend of the show.
OG friend of the show, Josh.
Josh Smith, Uncle Tim's son.
Yes.
And so they live in Kentucky, and they have like 10 acres right where they're at. And they have some deer and stuff that hang out around. And they were like hanging out one night, like around dinner time, I think. And he looked back in their backyard, and there was this buck standing in their backyard. And it's muzzleloader season up there. So he's like, babe, grab the muzzleloader. We got to shoot this buck. And so she grabbed the muzzleloader, went out back, and she misfired one time. Like, the primer didn't go off on the muzzleloader. Reloaded the primer, shot, and it was standing behind a gate. She thought she had a clear shot. And she shot through the gate.
Through, like, the metal.
The deer.
Yeah, through, like, the metal cross.
This is Josh's wife?
Yes, Ashley.
Yeah, Ashley.
Holy
yeah.
crap.
Yeah.
Go Ashley.
There's a perfect 50 caliber size hole through the gate where the muzzleloader went through the gate and into the deer and killed the deer.
Wow. That's like a once in a lifetime shot.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. Pretty crazy.
He's pulling up her Facebook right now, so I'm like, oh my gosh.
That's the deer.
He's a nice deer, too.
She says, I hit it through a gate in my fuzzy house shoes.
Yeah, she didn't even put on, like, real shoes. She, like, walked out in her slippers or something.
Dang.
My favorite part is she hashtags, stay comfy, my friends. Which, like, is the perfect thing for Uncle Tim's daughter-in-law to have hashtagged.
Oh, my
yeah,
gosh.
Yeah, for sure.
So, what's new with you is that you're not duck hunting in Arkansas, though.
Yeah, that's what's new with me. I'm not duck hunting at all is what's new with me. Which is a travesty in of itself. Mm-hmm. But Thanksgiving week, I'm home all week. So I'll be home like Monday.
That's happening.
We're going to go.
We got to hit it hard.
What's new with you, Trav?
Boom. What's new with me? We are still have pay your age folks dropping.
Oh, yeah. So this is your first episode.
We did a big promotion where we offered to take first-time duck hunters, folks that have never duck hunted before, on a duck hunt, guided duck hunt, and they could pay their age. So I gave up X number of slots. We planned to do 15. We ended up at 19. And a couple weeks ago, you remember somebody called and canceled. They were like, look, I'm going to get into duck hunting anyway. We had another guy do that this week. He's like, hey, man, I applied for some STA hunts. I applied for some stuff. I've got some other folks that are willing to take me. Why don't you give my spot to someone else?
Sweet.
Yeah, so we've created an epidemic, a backwards epidemic.
I think it's just so nice. You know, when Travis was telling me about that, I was like, this is why you see, like, hunters, no matter what they look like, have the hottest women that marry them, because they're such nice guys, some of them.
Yeah, no, Nate and I can both speak to attractive women that have found us for whatever reason.
For whatever
poor
reason.
Poor eyesight or because we're hunters.
It's because you guys have the best character. And it's just like, and like attracts like, right? So I love that people who have heard about the Pay Your Age duck hunts wanted to get in on that and then said, you know what? I can do it myself and I want someone else to have it. I think that's great.
It's super awesome. And if any guides are listening to this, we've actually seen an uptick in regular bookings as well. Like, we had a few regular days that we had. Man, even those people heard about them and were like, hey, I want to go on a regular trip because I know what you're doing and I appreciate it. So
didn't some guy offer to just send you $100 because he loved what you were doing?
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Like it's just been the feedback has been amazing.
Yeah.
And while we're talking about that real quick, this is the last week to get your dark order call. I've heard a lot of folks going and getting them, but this is the last week to get your dark order call 20% off from Scott. So that's code CB20 at darkwatercalls.com. You'll get 20% off at checkout.
Beautiful duck calls.
Beautiful duck calls.
And they work. Well, they work if you do.
I think their slogan is talk them into giving up. I like that.
That's cute.
What is new with you?
So we're rebranding.
What?
Yeah. We're going to get like a whole new logo and stuff. I put out a all call on Facebook and I was like, first of all, I have a little bit of graphic design skills myself, but they are pretty old.
You designed our current logo.
Yeah, and it's bad. But it got us going.
Yeah, it got us started. No, it was great. I will always have a special place in my heart for that logo. So
yeah, we have Christmas ornaments with that logo on it. But I'm a great like first round graphic designer for a company getting off the ground, but like we're recording our 60th episode right now. We have so many great listeners. We've
all
got,
across the world.
Yeah, and we have some plans and we want to be like ready for those. So we're rebranding and we're working with friend of the show Stephanie Hosh. I'm not really sure how to say her last name. She's engaged to other friend of the show Joe Polito. And she's a listener. So I'm pretty
the
excited.
Mustached wonder.
The mustached wonder that is Joe Polito.
How he flow. You can't spell I do without Polito. No. Reverse that.
You can't spell Polito without I do?
Yeah. That's their wedding thing, which I kind of love.
So, yeah. Hopefully in the next probably month or two, we're going to have some rebranded stuff, which will mean new t-shirts and all kinds of fun things.
Bumper stickers for those of you that keep bugging me about it.
Yep.
Hats.
But if you need a... We're about to bring back Do You Even Modeled, bro?
That's coming.
Duck season's coming. And please don't forget, we do have t-shirts at castandblastfl.com if you need a Do You Even Modeled, bro t-shirt.
Yeah. And we've also kind of hit a lull in reviews.
Oh, my gosh. You people, get on it. It has been like 2 weeks since we've had a new review. And we have some rules. First of all, somebody was asking Travis, how do I become a friend of the show? Like, what does it take to be a friend of the show?
Post a review, number one.
And that was
post
actually,
a review.
That was actually my buddy Noah, one of the guys that gave back one of the duck hunts.
Nice guy,
He's
Noah.
Like, in addition to giving back this duck hunt, how do I go about becoming a friend of the show? Because
well, you will be branded as friend of the show, Noah, if you'll go give us a 5-star review.
He did. He's already done it. Noah is a friend of the show.
Friend of the show, Noah, then.
We appreciate you. You're our friend.
Are there any other criteria?
That's pretty much it.
Okay.
You just need to leave us a review.
Okay. So right now we're at 83 friends of the show.
Yeah. And we would like to have 100 friends of the show before January 1st. So friends, we need you to go to your podcast listener, leave us a review. It's very hard to do. Think of it as, I don't know, like a puzzle you need to solve or a challenge, because it's not intuitive to go leave a podcast review.
It sounds like she's being sarcastic, but she's not.
It's really not. Like, they've designed the interface terribly. So go figure it out. Leave us a review and then crack yourself open a cold one for figuring it out.
Yeah, you can also think about it this way. You're all freeloading on this podcast, right?
Right.
I mean, they don't have to pay a dime.
Right.
This is
so
free content.
Think of this as like your payment for the podcast.
There you
right?
go.
I love that.
Your payment for the podcast is a 5-star review on iTunes. Say something funny, say something nice. Don't say anything. Just put 5 stars. I don't care.
Yeah.
That's your payment for the listening to the podcast.
But if you do say something funny, we will talk about it.
Oh, we'll read it. Or give us quote unquote constructive criticism, you'll become a frenemy of the show and we'll read that too.
Like D Wood Nasty, who's in the Hall of Fame as far as
oh man, I haven't checked in on him.
Yeah, I'm worried about him. We'll wait till season 2 of Jack Ryan so we can figure out what's happening there. So different type of episode today.
I'm so excited for this show.
Yeah, and
this is going to be a great one.
Yeah.
I have not checked the audio on this, so there may just be a weird pause and then we come back and do keep and release to our listeners.
No.
But no, a few weeks, maybe a month ago, I went and picked up some waterfowl taxidermy from Landon Blankenship, who, if you're in Florida, he is the man.
Mm-hmm, he is.
And honestly, if you're not in Florida, he's still the man. Mm-hmm. I mean, the dude is just, he's a waterfowl artist. And he was so kind. I mean, he's a great guy. And he was so kind. He gave us quite a bit of time. And we got these new mics that we can take and record mobile. It's our new mobile Cast and Blast platform. So took those, just hung out with Landon, and we've got that conversation. So it's hopefully going to be a good interview, and you guys will enjoy it and learn a lot about taxidermy. I learned a lot about taxidermy, stuff I didn't know.
Yeah, the dude is a talented artist, and there's a lot of engineering that goes into it, and it's a great listen. I'm so excited.
All right, I'm here with Landon Blankenship, who is the taxidermist in Florida for waterfowl. I'll be immodest for you. So tell us, Landon, how long have you been doing ducks?
This will be my fourth season for customers, but I've been doing it, you know, we started to about 10 years now. So,
and you worked under a mentor before that, right?
Yes, sir. Mr. Bill Comstock was my mentor.
And he passed away?
Yes, sir.
But you learn under a guy, but do you self-teach yourself some? I mean,
some of the stuff, you know, you just kind of learn on the fly. I mean, I've got DVDs. You kind of pick stuff from, you know, him that taught you, and you stuff that you kind of, you know, pick as you go, and, you know, off the DVD and books and stuff. But, you know, some of it is self-taught, learning as you go. It's challenging sometimes when people bring you stuff, but, yeah, a lot of it's, you know.
So I'm a guy that looks at this, and I don't know anything about how this happens. So when I bring you a duck, I bring it to you frozen. And you take it out of a bag, you thaw it out, and then tell me what happens. You skin it?
You start with I start with a breast incision from, you know, the clavicle, which is like what you call a bone, down to the vent, and just straight down, and you start going down the sides, and once you get to the sides, you get down to where your legs are, where you can get a hold of those, and you get those up where you can get to basically the knee joint, and you clip that, get the meat off each leg, and then you go down past the vent, tail, up the back, and to the, you know, the neck, and you cut that off, and then you're basically, your body's out, and then you have to...
You turn it inside out.
And then, you know, some people use real heads. I was taught using artificial heads. To me, you have no shrinkage in the bill. There's no residue of any meat or brain or any things left up there. You can paint it beforehand and then glue it back. So all that's out. And then, like I said, you invert each wing. So there's no meat left in that. The only thing you got left in that bird is actually the bird, when you get done, is his legs, the skin, the feathers, and the wing bones, and that's it.
It's like you just took his suit off.
Basically. And some people actually have got to where they, you know, I started taking the feet off and doing it separately, which is it's a little more challenging getting them back on, but it's easier to paint them, inject the stuff in them so they look more plump and more realistic. So and actually some guys have got to where they're starting to use, they'll mold their feet and put artificial feet on. So they never shrink. They never have to worry about bugs on that part, and which is, you know, another level of taxidermy.
Right. So the feet are the real feet.
Yes,
you inject them with what?
I started with formaldehyde and glycerin. It's a two-part 50-50. It's very dangerous. I got away from that. I started using, it's basically a liquid plastic. It sets it very fast, and it's a two-part, like epoxy, and you mixtures 50-50 on that, and you inject it, and then they dry, you know.
Solid.
You know, and then you, like I said, instead of waiting 2 weeks for the other one, you can wait 2 days and paint the feet.
So then you take that skin, and I've heard y'all talk about washing them.
Well, after you invert it, you would bring it over to my wire wheel, which is basically a 4-inch wire wheel. So they got soft, harder, you know, stiffer wheels, and you just would take that fat from the tail and go to the head and just remove every bit up down to the skin, and just the only thing left that is the quills.
Okay. So this thing looks like a. Like a sideways angle grinder, almost.
Basically, mine's over here in a box, so it keeps the fat and stuff from going anywhere. And like I said, it's just a wire wheel. You use like a grinder or whatever.
So it's spinning 1,000 miles an hour.
It's spinning, and you can touch it and stop it with your hand. The motor is actually like, you know, it's not a dishwasher. It might be a washing machine motor. It's only like a half horse, you know, 1/10 horse. It's not very big. And it's just, you know, that's what it does to get that fat off. Sometimes you got to use scissors and,
You're talking precision work, right?
You do your best to get as much off. That's one thing. I've only been doing it 4 years for customers and 10 years. I still struggle with some things. I'll be the first to admit it. You know, I try to get every bit of it off as you can, and it's tedious. And especially when you like the ones that come in that are not shined up, because I'm horrible at sewing, and I take everything in the house and wash it and sew it. Sometimes I'm standing over the sink for an hour.
Now, okay, so you
wire it.
You wire it to get the fat off.
Right, and you take and you wash it with Dawn dish soap. Like usually two washes. I actually use for one that's really, really bloody, I use Era laundry soap.
Okay.
And it takes all the blood clots out of it. And then the last thing I do before I freeze it is I got another solution of degreaser that's a little stronger and wash that again. And then I'll put it in the freezer. And then when I go to wash, the next thing, I have put it in a bug proof for whenever I go to monitor that for 30 minutes. And it lets off of like a perfume odor. It's supposed to help keep the bugs away.
Oh, so these things, you soak them in something.
Yeah, so you to bug proof them for longevity.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
That's pretty cool.
Some people don't. I do. That's the way, you know, Bill taught me to do it. He even had an extra where he had, you know, basically your preservatives is borax. He actually had powdered borax that had mothballs that were ground up, so it was another deterrent.
Some moths,
anything else would deterrent for this getting in it too. So I haven't been able to find it. He could never remember who he got it from. So
you skin the bird,
mm-hmm.
which is precision, right? You're using a scalpel or something.
Scalpel, yes, sir.
Like,
scalpel,
and then you wire him out, get all the fat,
meat.
Then you wash him.
At least three times. You wash it and at least rinse them at least 4 to 5 times to get all the, you got to get all the soap out, because that's the key to getting a fluffy bird is get all your soap and all your, you know, whatever's in it out. You just got to be nice. I mean, run it till there's clean water and nothing in it.
Then do you dry them?
I bring them out here. I usually wrap them
out and land in shop.
I, you know, bring them outside here to my shop and I put it, wrap them in a really nice, my wife hates it, by the way, of cotton towel. And that will draw a lot of the moisture out of the bird before I start drying. And the first dry, I use a shop vac on reverse. Some people use pet dryers, which is a little better because it has a little bit of heat to it. But once that butter, it's fine. I just kind of gets things started going, the drying process.
It's like a hair dryer.
Basically.
Essentially what you're doing.
And then after I get things started going dry, I'll switch to a hair dryer, just a regular standard hair dryer like my wife uses. And
you use hers?
I have my own out here. It is pink, I have to say. It is pink.
I feel like that would create some controversy.
I used to before I got my own. She would go, Matt, where's my hair dryer? So I had to run it back in there. But, and start drying that until every down feather is really dry, really, really good. You can see it, they're nice and fluffy, like just like a bird was, you know.
How long does that take, a day?
It depends on the bird. Now, you know, like a teal, 15 minutes, it's dry and ready to go. And I dried on a Canadian goose for an hour and a half.
Okay.
So, you know, it depends on the bird. Average bird, like a wood duck or a, you know, black bat, a ringneck, whatever you got, 15, 20, you know, about 45 minutes, you're done. But when I get to the neck area, when I get close to the head, because I don't use any high heat, don't ever use high, just, you know, mild heat or just air, I go to the air compressor and really blow really all small feathers around the face and tell the head to fluff the head up, because everybody looks at the heads.
Right.
And then go back to the dryer, the hair dryer, and finish it up. And even when I've mounted, I'll come back after the bird's mounted. I'll take all these wood ducks to try to, you know, it does an amazing job lining the feathers and get that nice crisp white line.
Especially on the crest.
Right. Just about 20 pounds of air pressure and just get back, because you can adjust it and just blow it and it kind of lines everything up and you know, it does a nice job. So
that's fascinating.
Well, you like I said, I can't take credit for it. That's what I said from, you know, DVDs and, you know.
Yeah, but I'll say this. My daughter just graduated high school last year, and she took an art class.
Mm-hmm.
She's not an artist. Now, she got to be in art.
Right.
But she's not. Taking an art class doesn't make her an artist, just like taking a taxidermy. There's an eye
right
to spacing, which we've talked about before, mm-hmm. online with stuff. You see bad taxidermy.
Right. And me, it hurts me because we all work hard for our money.
Right.
And I know, it seems like we've had this discussion before. You spend all this money for boat, decoys, gun, and then you shoot this bird.
And you want to spend $80 to get it.
I don't get it. I mean, yeah, I mean.
You're going to hang it in your living room for the next 30 years.
And you're going to look at something. We see it every day. And I hate it. I want to say stuff to people, but, I just, you know what happens.
Yeah, you're always respectful about it.
You try to be respectful, like, you know, but because then you know what happens. If you say anything negative, then you get pounded for it.
Right. But no, so tell me now, at that point you got the skin, you freeze it again?
I try to do a batch of 2 or 3 a week, because like I said, I work all week. Like Monday or Tuesday, I'll skin 1 or 2, and I have something to work on for the weekend. So I just, like I said, throw them back in the freezer and they're ready to go. After I skin it, like I said, I'll come out here and dry it. And I've, you know, got pretty fast at putting these things together. I normally can put two together on a Saturday if I get up at 5:30. It's kind of early. And I'm usually done by 2 o'clock.
Okay.
So
you try to knock two out. And this is basically you're taking your mold.
Yeah, everything's ready to go. The neck is on it. You know, holes are pre-punched, so the wire goes through it. Bills are all painted. Everything's kind of like an assembly line. You kind of get things ready so everything's nice and organized and things move along.
Do you pre-assemble like the... I'm guessing you pre-assemble, like, he's got a pintail here.
Yeah, it's got the body, and I've got the neck foam on there, and, you know, you try to put back, just like, here's the esophagus.
Right.
You know, you try to recreate what came out of the bird.
Right.
You know, then I wrap a neck foam, and sometimes you got to take this off because it's too fat.
So do you stick the head? Right now, he's just got the body and a neck.
The head would, you know, do you stick a marker here, so where, okay, measure, wherever the measurement is. I mean, I always leave long, because that way the head will come out here, and it'll,
right,
so, you know, just go up in here, and...
And then you put the skin over that, well, skeleton.
Yeah, the body will go, it'll go in the body like this, and then it'll be laying here like that. And then you start, the head's usually the last thing I always do.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, you search your wires for your wings if it's flying, and your legs. And you just, you know, I put some caulking in here. So
around the crop
and neck area, because that's usually, if you look on a bird, if you ever clean one.
You're doing what Nate does. You're pointing.
Well, I'm sorry. I got rid of this. Around the crop of the neck area, you would put some, you know, more fill in here to fill
it in.
Well, that's because a lot of fat is where you take out. You're trying to recreate what you took it out.
You're talking about the base of the neck. Base of the neck, fat is going
to... Right, where the fat, where the neck, this area around the neck and the base would come to. And like I said, and in here too.
So then you just will take it, you put that head on there, and then you fit the skin over it?
Well, you would put this first.
Okay.
And the head, like I said, after I've sewn everything up,
the head last.
Head is last thing I
do. Gotcha.
So, and like I said, if he's flying, you know, you put him on, you, and then put him on your board, and then you start, you know, assembling where you think want things to be. You know, your wings are for open flying. Get your neck position where you want it to be. You know, get your feet, you know, where you want those to be. Standing, you know, like I said, the same thing. Your head, like, I usually put mine on the table vise. Because it's nice and cured and stand it up, and then I can do everything, and then I'll...
You get really precise with
it. Yeah, you can move things around, and you just kind of be, you know, when you get ready to move it to your, you know, base where you're going to drift wood, you know, you just got it by your feet, slide your wires, and you're, you know,
basically done. You buy the foam bodies?
These bodies come from McKenzie Taxidermy. Okay. And these bodies here, which I really like a lot, are from Shane Smith, which is one of...
Is that Birdman?
No, this Shane Smith is Artistic Taxidermy.
Sorry. Yep.
So, he's one of the best there is. I mean, I hope they one day get to that way. But, I mean, his bodies are really anatomically correct. They're very forgiving. You got a lot of area here for moving of your legs and joints on the body. You know,
they've got like a... If I was describing it, it looks almost like a chicken without the wing. Like,
right.
If you were going to cook a chicken, it looks like a really small chicken without the legs or wings.
Right. It's, you know,
it's a breast in the back.
And they're not very heavy. They're very light.
No, super light.
Super light.
That's something that's always amazed me when you pick up a taxidermy duck. You think it's going to weigh 3 or 4 pounds,
right,
and it doesn't. It weighs 2 pounds.
Right. I mean, there's nothing. I mean, not only how many ounces that is, it weighs nothing. When you start adding your caulking and stuff, and, you know,
it gets some
weight to it then. But, I mean, sometimes I use caulking a lot, sometimes I don't. It all depends on, you know, how things are going and trying to recreate what was, you know, kind of remember what you did from that bird.
All right,
bird would go fatty, you're going to have to add some more caulking to it to recreate that.
So what's the bird you're happy when you see it come in?
Happiest?
Yes.
Any diver.
Really? Why is that?
Because divers have tougher skins and are way more forgiving when it comes to that wheel over there.
Okay. Because I'm guessing with that wheel, you could tear through the skin pretty easy.
Quickly. I mean, you can't stay in one place very long. I use, you know, when I'm wheeling it, I'll take a dish Dawn and some water and
squirt a bottle at it.
And you lubricate it and keeps everything dry, you know, moist and cool so it doesn't get hot. Because you can burn through a wood duck and a teal just looking at it.
So, by that question, what's the worst thing? I mean, you do it all. You have to see the business, but what's the one that... When it comes to your door, you're like, oh, I'm a... Is it a goose? Is it a...
No, I've done a couple geese.
A little teal? Is it
I don't, you know, I've got... I really don't mind blue wings. You know, green wings are actually, you know, especially a real fatty one, tear easier. A fattier bird will tear easier than a bird that's just flew in from out north and it has no fat on it.
Really? Why is that?
I don't know if it's just why that is.
Is it because the skin is thicker?
The skin is so thin and it's, you know, I've seen with... I had a teal that I did that I killed in Arkansas and was one of the fattiest birds I've ever had. And I had it just in my hands and it barely just ripped in half.
Really?
Just, I had, you know, and I sewed it back. I did it for dead mouth for my son. And luckily, I hit it because I didn't sew the correctly, and everything was off. You know, and just, model ducks are, and I hate seeing model ducks.
Right.
Just because.
Which I'm going to bring you a model this season.
Well, I want my own model duck. I want my own model duck, you know. I got a couple of I got to do. I got one I'm doing tomorrow.
Because, and that's because of the pin feathers. Now, talk, okay. So we have a lot of listeners that do fishing only. Mm-hmm. And they're beginning to learn a little bit about waterfowl from us talking about it and stuff. But pin feathers are the new feathers?
New feathers that are coming in that they've lost. You know, ducks go through two molts. You know, I think Florida birds, like black bellies and model ducks, tend to, I think they molt basically year round. So it's hard.
It's not as seasonal as a blue winged bird that you know is going to molt.
Anything that flies north to south. Our wood ducks don't, you know, they molt twice a year basically. But I don't know what it is about black bellies. Follows, I've done a couple. They have some pins, but they're not as bad as a black belly or a model. Model ducks seem to me are the worst. And it's not just Florida. If it's a Texas model duck or Louisiana model, they all, I guess because of warm climate, they're constantly losing feathers.
Okay.
And, you know, people bring them in here, and I don't think it matters what part of the year, it's the beginning part of the season. I'm the last day that were worse than the beginning. So, I mean, it's a tough bird to make look good.
Okay, so you brought up models. And we talk about, do you even model, bro, on the show all the time.
We're here all the time.
So, this is just off the record, but just for all these listeners to hear. How many black ducks have you seen in your years of doing taxidermy? So, 10 years of being around taxidermy.
One, two, four.
Okay. I've seen two killed in Florida in my years of duck hunting.
I've killed two myself.
The chances of you running across the black are not super high. That's why I've tried to...
I've talked to somebody, you know, I've been around duck hunting since I was with my dad 4 years old, so I've been around a lot. Years ago, they used to see quite a bit of them. And greenheads.
Right.
And we don't see that anymore.
Right.
Especially on quite coastal areas that you see a lot more black. It seems like black ducks are more of a coastal duck.
Agreed.
And it's just, you know, I've killed two black ducks myself on Orange Lake, 20 minutes from here, in my house.
Wow.
And I swore that I thought they were black ducks. Mountain models until I picked them up and we had one. They're not.
Right. Yeah. And it's, when you get one in your hand, they're conspicuously not.
And my son killed one, believe it or not. I think he was 17 years old, so he's 20, just turned 22. So not too long ago on Lake Russo, we went before Thanksgiving, and I seen it, and I called to it, quite came right to me, and he shot. I didn't tell him what it was, because I knew he'd freak out, and it hit the water. I mean, it was big old black
duck. I saw the pictures you sent me of that one. That was a huge black duck.
And he was, he killed two ducks that day, but he said that work was worth 100 ducks anyway. And I agree with him. It's a trophy.
Right.
And Bill mounted it for me, which, you know, he's still got it now.
That's awesome. So we've got one of Emily's ducks over there, and she was talking, was she talking about Cookie Monster?
It was the thing about the dance thing y'all had, like, who was going to be dancing with who?
It was the thing where she kept picking crazy stuff.
Right.
We were talking about duck species.
If something was happening, if they had a reality show, I think.
That's what it was. And she wanted to do ducks.
Yeah, she had dancing with a Cookie Monster.
And you wanted to put one?
Yeah, I almost bought a small Cookie Monster and stuck it on her mount so that she'd have a Cookie Monster dancing with her wood duck. But I didn't find me one.
Poor Emily. She gets it going and coming. She brings it on herself sometimes, though. So tell me, how many birds you try to do a year?
I try to keep it between 30 and 40. It seemed like I'm always behind, you know, family stuff, thing that you can't control, that kind of stuff. Last year, I kind of got lazy and had the storm here, and then I got a new boat, so I was tinkering with that and kind of got behind myself. And this year, I told myself I was trying to have as much as I could done, and I'm not close. I'm 18 birds short of being done for
the season. That's not bad.
So I'm not going to make it, but I'm, you know, last year I don't do anything during duck season. This year, I got to get stuff done.
Right.
Because I know people are going to start wanting to bring it. Plus, I got a competition coming up in February that I want to do.
That's the state taxidermy.
Right, down in Lakeland.
And you did pretty well last year.
Well, it was my first time, you know. And there's not a lot of people that, you know, that do waterfowl in Florida. There's a couple guys that do that are real, they're friends and that do good jobs. But, you know, we had Matt Smith from Blue Ribbon Taxidermy. He was our judge. And I was nervous, never did what to expect. I just, you know,
I had a
blue wing and a canvas back, and I got first best of show for the blue wing, best of bird in my category, which is professional division. And I got a first place. You, they go by scores. You know, anything over 90 is a blue ribbon, and then I got a first place on my canvas back, and I got a first place on my habitat. So
wow. And that was a spectacular. Like, the blue wing, I remember specifically, right. That habitat on it was completely mounted, like, on a reed,
yeah,
right?
They were metal reeds that I made and painted and put in, like, a little small, just a, I think it was a walnut base with a little water and duckweed. Something simple, but, you know.
Yeah, because people take it for granted.
Judge hated the reeds.
Really?
He hated it.
People take it for granted that you're kind of a, you're not just a taxidermist, you're also having to create this piece of art that goes in the house with habitat and
right, snow, you know, mud, lily pads,
splashing water.
I haven't done a splash yet. I tried doing it before. I actually watched a live stream yesterday from Matuska Dazzler on how to make splashes, so I got a little bit of an idea. So maybe there's off season for something myself. I'll be doing practice.
Do you practice on your own ducks? Is that what you do?
I try to, because I, you know, I don't want to do something for a customer's bird and not like it and give it to them. They might be happy, but I wouldn't be happy.
Right. Yeah, I totally understand that. So let's talk taxidermy tips. And you and I have been texting and talking about this for a month now, probably going further back than that. What are some do's and don'ts of taxidermy? Like, let's start with pantyhose.
No pantyhose.
A lot of people say, put your birds in pantyhose, it'll keep them safe.
I think what the thing with pantyhose was the people were talking about. I mean, I'm used to do it too, but you can't, you can put them in a pantyhose in the field to keep that bird nice and groomed and laid down, but it's not necessary. And I think people thought that you put him in pantyhose, you could just walk right to the freezer.
Stick him in.
He's not. There's nothing protecting that bird whatsoever. So I don't know pantyhose. Zero.
Vacuum sealers. You and I went through this last year with a bird we saw.
Yeah, and I've, you know, had people ask me about it. I say you can use them only if you have one that you can stop and control yourself.
Yes.
You don't want to crunch them down where you're sucking all the moisture out, because that's where you get freezer burn. Plus, if they have any checkered inside of, which most of them do, that checkered pattern will be imprinted in the feathers.
It's almost
and
in the leg, out,
and
right?
It's not coming out. So don't use, I don't use them.
Right.
I just use
2.5 gallon. And you told me this, and I've been telling my clients this for a couple seasons now. I buy a box of 2.5 gallon Ziploc bags. If there's a bird they want to keep, when we get back, I fold his head over. We stick it. Is that how you like it? You fold their head back over the back?
Either, if it's, you know, if most birds, you know, like a wood duck, you can't get his head under the wing. But if you can get it under his wing, like a pintail, anything that's got a longer neck, if you do that, it's better, because that wing will protect the head from freezer burn and, you know, anything. Basically, the head and the feet's usually what gets freezer burn.
Okay.
And if you're going to have long term, you can wrap his head in a wet paper towel and their feet in a wet paper towel, and then put it in a Ziploc bag. Because what happens is the wet paper towel locks in the moisture.
Air is bad.
Air is bad.
Moisture's good.
Moisture's good.
Okay. Now, let's talk about bird selection. A lot of people have sentimental birds.
Mm-hmm.
It's my first bird I've ever shot. I take a lot of people in their first duck hunts. Mm-hmm. You would probably recommend choose a better bird over the sentimental bird if you can.
If you can. If you go out on a hunt, like I said, it's the first kid's first bird, it depends on what it looks like.
Landing out of my son's first, it was a bluebill, it was a couple seasons ago, and it was pin-feathered all to pieces, if I remember right.
I mean, it can be done. The biggest thing is it depends on how the bird was handled after it's been retrieved. You know, we'll go on that too if you weren't ready. But if you got one that's really, really, really damaged bad, you know, and it just doesn't look like it's going to turn out to be a good amount, don't bring it. Or whoever you take it to, they'll think in the long run.
Right.
You know, I mean, and you can hide a lot, but if you want something that looks long-term, look good for a long, you want, you know, pick a better bird.
And that's one of my favorite things about you is you'll take the bird out when I get here and say, let's look and see what you got.
If it's thought out, I would rather look at it when you're here.
Right, and tell you.
And I do it with everybody. When I thaw it out and I look at it, if it's really, really bad and what you're looking at it, I'm going to call and say, look, this ain't working. Is there any option we could do something else? I mean, I got a pintail tomorrow, and the guy won it flying. It's not going to happen.
The damage is
too... I mean, he shot it at 15 yards. And he shot it, and somebody, I don't know if he did it or somebody else, but it was crippled, and he shot it, and it basically almost ripped the tail end of it completely off.
Bagged it.
Beautiful bird, 8-inch sprig on it. I mean, it's just basically the only thing that's good on it is the tail, the sprig on it, and the, from the chest up looks good. The rest of it is bad.
Finisher tools. You have an opinion on them?
At first, I thought they were good, but I'm as if you use a finisher on a bird that you're going to eat. Do yes. not use it on a bird that you're going to have mounted.
Let's go back for just a second, too. So if somebody kills their first wood duck, let's say,
mm-hmm.
and they have a good morning, and they kill another bird that's as good or better,
right?
There's no harm in saving both of those and taking them to your taxidermist and say, this is the first one.
Right.
Like, follow all your regulations. Don't get over on your possession limits, but take them both to your taxidermist and say, I'd like to get this one out because it's the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can't,
It
has you a backup plan there, and
correct.
You still get a good bird, a memory of that hunt,
mm-hmm.
but you're going to get a much better art piece, because this is what this is at the end of the day. It's an art piece for your house.
Correct. And that's a good thing to do. If you, like I said, if you have an option, if you kill another bird and it's better than your first one, I know it's your first one, but you know you killed your first bird, but I would rather have a better-looking bird for, like I said, to go on the wall, because it just, you know, it just turns out a better, I guess, product in the end when you got one that's less damaged.
What about dogs?
Some dogs are that good. Some, you know, I don't recommend
it on the mouth of the dog.
Right. Every dog's different. Some are hard mouth, some are soft mouth. I always tell everybody, if you got a dog, hold them. If you can wait out there, pick it up by his feet or his bill, never around the neck.
Never ring it.
Never ring it.
And never put it on a strap.
Never put it on a strap. You know, and if the bird's still alive, and I'll, you know, the easiest way to dispatch a bird, if it's still alive, find your hard surface, breast down, either use your hands or your knee, gently press in the back, and it'll suffocate it, and then no damage is done.
Right. Do it in the boat.
Do it in the, if you've got a boat, like I said, just put it on, put your knee in it, and just kind of press down, and it dispatches pretty quickly.
Okay.
No ringing necks. Oh, God, no.
No ringing necks.
No ringing necks. No beating on a boat paddle.
And I can tell by experience that trying to drown one takes a while.
Yes, it does take a while. And like I said, knee in the back, I mean, I've done it some old personal birds. Doesn't take long at all. And like I said, you're not twisting. You're just putting your knee and just lightly putting pressure down on it. You can hear the ribs crack and break, and it suffocates it. I know it kind of sounds cruel, but it's, you know, no finisher.
It's quick and easy.
You're using a finisher, they do work, and I got one hanging right there.
Right.
They put another hole in the head. More holes means more sewing, means more work, and then that brain stuff, sometimes it's hard to get out of the feathers. Yep. So
less finisher holding. For eating.
Finisher for eating.
No finisher for mounting.
No finisher for mounting.
So tell me, what's a bird you haven't done that you'd like to do, that you'd like to undertake?
Oh.
Is there something cool? Like, have you done a cinnamon?
I got one in there. It was gifted to me.
Really?
Yes.
So you're going to get to mount one?
And I've got a harlequin in there.
That's a cool bird.
That was gifted to me by my mentor. He'd went to Alaska, and he killed his kings. He killed his harlequins. And he killed some old squaws. And he bounded his own, of course. And
right.
I went over, and like I said, when he had Lou Gehrig's disease, and he, you know, sitting in his wheelchair, and he was, you know, kind of close to the end. And his wife came and said he wanted you to have this. And I bought him and choked up, and, you know, that's a big deal.
Right.
And that's actually what I'm going to use for my competition.
All okay. Right,
I got a big thing in my head planned up: rock, seaweed, starfish, you know, maybe some blue water flashing up, something or other, and it's going to be in a glass case because I want to, you know, memorial that bird from here on out.
Right, because that's going to be in your house.
The little baggie you see right here, these two
that's the shot that came out of it.
And that's going to be incorporated somewhere on the mount. In the mount somewhere. You might not see it, but I'll know it's there.
Right,
so.
Almost like your signature being somewhere.
So.
Well, Landon, what else do you want people to know about taxidermy? Be patient with your taxidermist.
Be patient.
This is my opinion. You can tell me if I'm wrong. Your taxidermist wants to do the best job he can do for you, so you come back to him and use him again.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They're going to take their time because they want it to be right. And the best ones are going to be real slow because they're perfectionists.
Right. I mean, most of us are, you know. And we don't like being behind. Believe me, I don't like being behind no more than anybody else. You know, sometimes, like I said, with me being a part-time guy working 4 hours a week, sometimes it's hard to come home and know you got to come out here
and work 12 hours or 6 hours.
I don't try to work too late because my wife gets a little upset at me because I don't spend no time with me. But, you know, she understands I got to get stuff. And she's been my biggest supporter, my biggest motivator, and I owe a lot to her. So, you know, she's the one that pushed me for the competition. because I didn't want to do it because I'm kind of out of my comfort zone, you know, and that just it, and I'm glad I did it because I learned a lot from, you know, doing it and kind of figured out, you know, say, hey, I can do this.
So right.
I'm my own worst critic, and I'll say that, you know, and I look at all these birds here. They look good, but I can see faults in every one of them.
And I can't tell where you stitched any of them.
That's me. You know, one thing Bill always told me, he says, when you do a bird, the next one you won't be better than last, and you'll never be complacent, and you'll always be improving and trying to strive to be better. And that's what I try to do. And sometimes I feel like I fall short on every one of them because I see stuff after they're dry, like, man, what I should have done this.
When do you open up to take birds? Usually,
I usually wait until February, end of the season. But this year, I'm going to do things differently. As soon as the season starts, instead of having a big influx of like 20 birds coming in at the beginning of the year, I'm just going to start. You know, once the season starts, most people should wait for a bird to get mounted, unless it's a special bird, like first this or dog right. or kid or whatever. They should wait. Other than the fact that like wood ducks or some of the others. You want them to plume up anyway.
Right.
It's usually, you know, after Christmas. But I am going to start taking birds as soon as the season starts.
They'll trickle in a little bit.
So they'll trickle in, and I can start actually, and what I'm going to do this year differently is skin everything before I even start mounting. I'm going to skin every bird. That way I can order all my materials.
Gotcha.
All at one time, and I'll have to, once I got everything skinned, I can start mounting.
Because that's something people don't understand. You have a lot of expense in this.
Yes.
To create this thing, you got to get driftwood, you got to get a body, you got to get a head,
right.
you got to have paints.
Right.
You got to then spend your time, which sounds to me like you're putting like 10 or 12 hours in a bird. Is that right? Is that
something like that? I mean, if you was to take your time from skinning to washing, wheeling, sewing, mounting, going looking for driftwood,
right?
You know, all the stuff in it. You know, there's time involved. You know, and time is money, and you know. We all like to get paid for what we like to do.
Right, and you enjoy it. Obviously, you enjoy it. And
obviously,
you're an artist, and you enjoy the hobby of it and the professionalism of it and doing getting better and better and better. But you also, no one works for free.
No.
So I just, it's interesting to me. It's a fascinating, I don't know much about it, but it's fascinating. I think you do fantastic work, obviously. That's
Thank
why.
You.
So I'm standing here. But
got a ways to go.
I can tell because I'm looking at four things that look like they could hang in a museum. So, Landon, thank you for your time,
yes, sir.
Bro.
I appreciate
Always
it.
Always good to hang out with you.
Okay, so I'm hoping that everyone just heard Landon Blankenship talk about taxidermy.
Yeah, if the audio was a little bit squirrely, it's because we're figuring those mics out, but we'll get better.
But thanks again to Landon for doing that for us. So, keep and release. Emily, what is your release item?
My release item is filters on social media.
Okay.
Okay.
Nate,
so,
and I don't know what those are.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, I'm confused here.
So there, if you ever see a girl or a boy on social media and they look plastic or beautiful, it's probably because they're using a filter on their camera. Like Instagram has the beauty filter, which I'm a huge fan of normally, but it's no fake November. So my girlfriend issued a challenge. She's like a makeup sales lady. And she was like, you know, social media puts so much pressure on people, blah, blah, blah. Let's do no fake November. We're not going to do any filters. We're going to show everyone what our real unpretty life looks like and just make it real. And I thought that was freaking awesome. So I'm releasing filters for November.
Okay.
No fake November.
Much like the men release shaving for November.
There you go.
I like it.
I might release shaving for November.
Don't think we're going to do that.
All right. Well,
we're going to take a vote on that.
Okay.
We'll get the Broward County Supervisor of Elections involved.
Oh, so if you want to see me completely unfiltered as far as beauty and my mouth, I'm on Instagram at La Vida Loca. So it's LOVEDALOCA. La Vida Loca.
Because your middle name is La Vida.
Because my middle name is La Vida. And it sounds like La Vida in Spanish.
It's not because she's a big fan of Ricky Martin.
Correct.
Right. Yeah, it's a family.
Nothing
name.
Against you if you are a big fan of Ricky Martin.
Right.
Outside, inside out. Nate, what is your release item?
So my release item is. Hold on a second.
I just like totally blanked.
Well said.
I'm leaving all this in there.
This is part of Nate's stroke that he has sometimes.
Oh my God.
So painful for him too.
We may have to bring back the cold open.
Oh, here we go. I got it. So my release is vehicle tires.
Oh.
Buying tires for your vehicle is not a fun thing to do.
No. And you have to take out like a separate
freaking
loan.
Yeah, they're so freaking expensive. And like my truck needs tires. And so I'm like trying to scrape together $500 plus to get tires on my truck. And it's just a pain in the butt. And, you know, I wish there were some like good tires out there that were like $50 a piece. That would be awesome.
Agree.
But I don't think those exist anymore.
They don't. I'm a fan of the used tires, though.
Mm-hmm. We do that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I thought about doing that, but with the new ones, you do get some kind of warranty, and a lot of times the place will, like, rotate them for free for the life of your tire and all this stuff. Right. So,
yeah, no,
there's some advantages to going new in that space.
Totally agree. So I've got a controversial release.
Hit me with it.
All right. What's one of our favorite nonprofits that we talk about all the time?
Backcountry.
Yeah. Do you follow Hal Herring on Facebook at all?
I don't, no.
So Hal Herring is the host of the BHA podcast and blast. Dude, I need you to pump the brakes a little bit on your Bull Sugar love.
Oh.
Like, I just need
on your
you.
What?
He's all about Bull Sugar, and he just is parroting. And it's like, you're an important voice in conservation. You're an important voice nationally. I need you to be informed about what you're talking about. Like, not just parroting talking points from organizations that, I'm not saying what Bull Sugar's doing is bad, but I'm saying I don't agree with them a lot of the time. And I'm pretty involved in what's going on in our ecosystem, in our water quality, and from a conservation standpoint. So just pump the brakes a little bit, maybe do some investigative reporting or maybe just don't comment on it. Like,
yeah,
you don't have to share every post they share. I mean, but if you look at his feed, it's just relentless. And like, man, some of this is not accurate information, what you're sharing right here. Like, it is known inaccurate information. And I just don't like that because it discredits you. It discredits organizations you're affiliated with. It's just frustrating. So I'm not besmirching. I'm not releasing BHA. I'm just saying, let's take a minute and be informed if we're going to comment on this stuff.
Agreed.
That's a good word.
Keeps.
You really want me to go first?
Yes, please go first.
Okay. So Nate, do you remember about 4 weeks ago, Travis committed to doing a Beachbody program?
I vaguely remember that. Yes.
Yes.
With your sister.
With Kaylee.
Right. Yes.
Well, I would like to give an update because we've reached the halfway point. They are both still in it. They have
not missed a workout.
Have not missed a workout either of them, although you owe me a leg day workout today.
I do.
Kaylee has had great results. She's lost 3 pounds so far.
You can't
She sent me a before and after picture, and she looks great.
It's crazy, right? And she's lost inches off her body. Travis has lost 3 inches off his waist and 3 inches off his hips.
Svelte.
And he's gained inches in his like biceps and his thighs and stuff. It's like a linebacker.
Ryan Gosling-esque?
I would. It's like when Bradley Cooper had to bulk up for that American Sniper role. You know, he got cut for that. Yeah, it's kind of like that.
So anyway, that is my keep because I just love.
Well, we may have to cut some of this out if you keep talking.
Did you know that regular exercise will increase your libido?
I've heard that in places.
Now you know. Anyways, it's just cool because like the programs work if you do. And Kaylee and Travis have been like showing up. Kaylee's committed to the meal plan a little bit more than Travis is, but even both of them have cheated and they're doing great still. So I'm just real proud of my peeps.
I'm proud too.
Yeah.
My keep is this is the last episode you will hear from us until after Thanksgiving.
Because
it's duck season and Thanksgiving week and we're taking a week off and I'm pumped. I'm monumentally pumped. I don't have anything else to say to that, but I'm stoked about it.
I'm excited to have a week off too and do some hunting.
Yeah, like Nate's going to be here. Mm-hmm. Matt's going to be here. We're going to have clients. It's just...
Can I tell... Okay.
All my clients that week are friends of the show. All of them.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah.
I might take that week off and just go hunting with y'all.
Every day?
We have breakfast pizza for after hunting.
Oh my gosh. We're not having breakfast pizza. We're not bringing people home and
it's
cooking.
Listen, let me tell you about it. The crust is made of biscuits. It's got sausage on it and cheese
and sausage gravy.
Okay.
It is okay. Legit.
I'm into that.
You know
I'm
where
totally
it's from?
Into that.
It's from Aldi.
It's from Aldi.
Of course it's from Aldi. Everything and in your lives is from Aldi.
You're supposed to scramble eggs and sprinkle it on top, but Emily's allergic to eggs, so we don't do that.
But we could.
You should
we
have
could.
Some eggs on the side
yeah.
so that people just, can.
Like, eggs could be the Parmesan cheese of our
yeah.
yes.
it is,
breakfast
yes.
pizza.
It is not Beachbody approved, but it is freaking delicious. Like, we tried one, and then we went back and bought almost all they had
yeah.
just to stock up on them.
Our deer freezer has no deer in it. It has nothing but breakfast pizza.
Just breakfast pizza for after right. duck hunts. Okay, so my keep is an actually pretty important one, I feel, is the Georgia Outdoor Stewardship Act.
Big time.
Which passed with flying colors, like 83%
What
passed.
Is it?
It's an act that dedicates 75% of all tax revenue collected from the sale of outdoor recreational equipment to the purpose of protection and preservation of conservation land. So this is like, you know, North American model of conservation being fleshed out on a state level. And it's really cool. And it's not just hunting equipment. It's like all outdoor recreation equipment. So it's like encompassing a ton of stuff. And it's supposed to help like local governments with like local parks and trails. Also states acquiring land for, you know, protection of wildlife and clean water, things like that. But my keep is that Georgians passed it and it is now law. And I'll give a shout out to BHA because they were one of the big ones that helped push this act and help
very
you know,
instrumental
get the word
in
out.
It.
Yep, get the word out and get everybody on board with it. So, big fan of that. You know that this passed in the state of Georgia. Hopefully, other states will take notice and start to do some stuff like that too.
I would not have heard about it if not for BHA.
Right. Yeah.
So, kudos.
That's awesome. I like that. Maybe Florida could get something like that going.
If we can get our voting figured out.
Yeah. Listen, guys, thank you for listening. If you haven't voted yet in South Florida, please get out and vote. Late voting is open.
Oh, my God. Could we F that up any worse?
And stay woke.
Stay woke. Thanks for listening to the Cast and Blast Florida podcast. For more info on the topics from today's episode, like the Beachbody program, getting Travis and Kaylee results, or the Georgia Outdoor Stewardship Act, you can check out the show notes at castandblastfl.com. While you're there, check out the shop link and pick up a Do You Even Model Grow t-shirt for duck season. Don't forget, we'll be off next week for Thanksgiving. Catch you on the flip side.